closer.
You are listening to the La Tavola Marque Radio Network.
Hello and welcome. Thank you very much for joining us on another episode of our little podcast from Italy. My name's Jason.
Ciao, buongiorno. I'm Ashley.
And today's the 2nd of April. I hope everyone had a nice holiday weekend. It's time to get into the groove here in Italy.
Get into the groove. Yes, it is. It feels so good. We've had our first guests. Easter. It is the official kickoff to the season of having the Agriturismo open and all for our neighbors as well. It's always, okay, once Easter starts, the season begins.
It doesn't really feel like the season should
begin.
It's a cold, overcast, I shouldn't say cold, chilly, overcast day.
Well, we're sitting outside.
We're sitting outside and we're listening to the water pass through the little stream that goes along our house and hope maybe it'll pick up. I doubt it.
And the birds chirping. A few of the trees are starting to bloom. But it is just dang. It is wet.
Yeah, it is wet. We had Gaggi over this morning. The Godster, as everyone knows, our adopted Italian father. He was over this morning complaining about how there's nothing to do. He's going back to Fano. He's very upset with
very
the weather.
Agitated.
Very agitated.
He was in a good mood this morning.
He was in a good
very
mood.
Very playful.
Yeah, yeah.
Talking about quasi-hippies on the coast. So funny.
There's always a crack up. But it's late. It's 10. It's 10 in the morning right now, and Europe finally did its changeover to change the clocks last week. This last weekend. So.
I know. I was going to say. I think that's why it's a little late for us. We're a little off from the time change.
Yeah.
And because it's so dark and cloudy out, it doesn't make you want to jump out of bed so much. But we are out on the porch, and the cats are joining us. And so let's talk about the guests we've had.
All right.
Let's dish.
We had a great kickoff to the season. We talked about the perennial plate guys that we had. And we just had a family doctor from
Northwestern
University, which we'll talk about Dr. Mike in a minute.
Yeah, we've got a great interview with him coming up. Stay tuned. Stick around for the second half of the segment.
And we had a great Easter. We went yesterday to a hardcore farmer's breakfast. So
come una volta.
Like one time. So in Italy, you don't really eat a big breakfast very often. And
no.
Easter and Pasquetta, Easter and Little Easter Monday is one time when Italians will get together. And we were invited out to Carlo and Gigi's, our pig farmer friends out by Urbino, for a farmer's breakfast.
Seriously.
This was no...
No joke.
A lot...
no pancakes?
No. We had a beautiful salad of tripe that they served first.
Okay, and not a fan of tripe.
Ashley's not a fan of tripe.
But
it was delicious.
It was
with potatoes and some cut up vegetables.
And a ton of like olive oil.
Olive oil and a little lemon.
And it was really good. It kind of freaked me out. I was like, looking at Jason, oh God, should I try this? And you have to try it. You have to be nice and try everything. And oh God, but it was. It was not bad. It was really good.
It was really good. Then they served a dish of the lungs and kidneys and heart and liver of both the pig and the lamb.
Separately.
And those were kind of like cooked, slow cooked in oil. Really flavorful. Really good.
It was the best version of that I'd ever had, too. I preferred the lamb. I thought it was a little more mild than the pig. But it was good. I was shocked. I was pretty like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm eating this stuff.
What else?
Just don't think about it. Well, also because they had awesome homemade bread. Like a big fat tortilla of a flatbread and then a piadine. And then they had...
I think those were piadine romagnolo.
I think so too, because they didn't have like
Emilia
the strudo.
No, it's a different. It's almost like a bread that's just...
That's where he's from.
Yeah, so I think that's where that was from, because I didn't recognize that bread.
No, anymore. But it was good.
It was delicious.
And then they also had a focaccia kind of...
Mm-hmm.
And that was awesome.
What other plates came then? Then he did ribs, pork ribs from his pigs in umido and like tomato sauce, slow cooked.
Oh, and the frittata.
Yep, and a frittata of budelli, so the small intestine of the pig that they clean
out. That was
out.
Good.
That was good. And I know you say, oh, that's weird, but
I know these things sound really gross.
It sounds really weird, but think of all the sausages and salamis are encased in these budelli. So
you eat it anyway.
It's not that big of
a
deal.
It's just a porky bit.
It tastes like pork. It's all the stuff was really, really good.
Oh, and then there was tripe in another way too, with like a wild fennel and a red sauce.
Tripe in like a red sauce with wild fennel.
That one
like
I was
tomatoes.
Not as wild a wild.
I thought
about.
That was good too, but he cooked the tripe really well. It wasn't chewy at all, which tripe can sometimes be chewy. Look, it's not something that I wake up on on a Saturday and be like, let's go get some tripe in the lungs, but. But it was good. It was good to have something different.
I know. It really was.
It really was different.
When we went back to the car, I was like, I'm kind of proud of myself. I didn't freak out. I was very respectful, and I tried everything, and I pretty much liked everything.
Yep.
And Gija makes this awesome marmalade of green tomatoes, and I've got to do it because she used it on a crostata, and it was really, really good.
So you pick the tomatoes that won't get turn red at the end of the season in the late September, the plants still continue to produce tomatoes, and they're just not going to get red until the before the frost comes. So you pick them and you make a marmalade out of, and it didn't have a. It was interesting. It didn't really have a tomato-y taste.
No, it tasted like fruit.
Yeah, it did taste like fruit. Absolutely.
It was really good.
So that was great. It was fun to get invited out there. And we couldn't go the normal road to their house because it was washed. It was totally muddied out. So we had to go this, not too crazy. I mean, we live on a kind of crazy Strada Bianca or a white road anyway. So to go, 20 minutes through the hills on a white road. Is not that big of a deal.
No, I was just nervous that I hoped to God I got the directions right that he was telling me on the phone because he started talking so fast and I was like, okay, keep making rights. And then he kept talking and talking and talking. And I thought, oh my God, how long are these directions? I'm never going to remember this. And I was like, I'll give you a call when I get to about that point there. And sure enough, we found it. So I was really relieved. I thought, oh God, Jason's going to kill me. We're going to get stuck down some crazy dirt road and I'm not going to have understood any of this. But we made it. It was a lovely way to spend Monday morning.
So, we did exactly that. We did Pasquetta or Little Easter with friends, and that's how the saying goes. You spend Easter Sunday with family and Little Easter Monday with your friends. So it was great. It was great to see Carla and Gija, and we're going to go to a giant agricultural, what would you call it, fiera?
Market.
It's not a market. It's like a exposition.
Yeah, expo.
Expo. We're going to a giant agricultural expo near Perugia on Friday.
Live animals,
equipment, different things.
Tools, tractors.
Everything for the countryside. I can't wait. It's going to be awesome.
Jason's face lit up when they started talking about it. He's like, what time? Where? I'll be there. Okay. How much money can I spend?
I'm not going to buy anything, but...
He was asking Gaji today, is there anything we need, anything at all, some tools I should get, or...
Capsule oil, savior, all you want to do is spend your money. So Easter went great.
It was nice.
Yeah, it seems like I can't believe it's Easter, I can't believe it's April already.
I know.
It's the 2nd of April today, oh my God. But right before Easter, we had, Ash, well, you set it up, Ash.
We had Dr. Mike Reichotz here from Northwestern, a super energetic family practitioner who was here to learn all about the Mediterranean diet and the secret to long life.
All right, so here he is.
All right, today we have a very special guest with us. Our first interview with a guest who is also a doctor. We have Dr. Mike Reichotz here with us, and he is a doctor in Chicago, a family practitioner, and has a new position at Northwestern. And we have had nothing but exciting, energetic conversations about food and health and salt and olive oil, and I thought it would be really fun to sit down and share some of this with our, our dozens of listeners out there. So welcome, Mike.
Hey, no, thanks for having me, Ashley. It's been really, really, really fun the last 5 days being here.
Well, we're so glad you came out. So let's talk a little bit. First, tell us a little bit about you and your history in health and food.
Well, I for the first 10 years of my practice was a small town doctor in Colorado, and you know, took care of the whole town and the surrounding 10 miles, and really learned a lot about helping people to take care of themselves through diet and nutrition, exercise. Those things I think were probably had the most impact for anything that I could do. So, although I could treat disease, I found that trying to prevent disease and, you know, promoting wellness and well-being was much more impactful on people and their lives than just treating their disease and their illness once they were discovered. So although we did do a lot of diagnosing of disease, I found it much more rewarding to try to prevent those things. And so that's really been the main focus for my practice in medicine since then. And it's been, I've been in practice now 16 years.
And how about some of the exciting things you're taking on at Northwestern?
Well, at Northwestern, I'm really looking forward to it because I've joined a large medical group and I'm the director of population medicine there. And so I have a much larger role working with a large medical group and a large group of, you know, 150 primary care doctors. And my main job, in addition to having a practice there, is going to be to help them with quality improvement and quality measures and practicing better medicine. So I'm really looking forward to that as well and bringing what, you know, my take on prevention to a larger group of doctors so that I can have more impact on the population.
It's great. And you have a, I don't know if you'd call it a niche or a focus, but you, at least while you've been out here in Italy, you very seem to be interested in the longevity of life and the relationship with health and the Mediterranean diet and some of that. So I think this is what is really exciting.
Yeah. For me, one of the biggest issues since I've been in practice is, you know, people coming in not having good habits, that, you know, smoking, overeating, being overweight. This is true all over the world, but it's really true in the United States. And even in Colorado, which is the leanest state in the United States, we had major problems with childhood obesity and obesity in general. So I found very soon that I have always been a cook, and I've been cooking since I was 5 years old. And I started to adapt my cooking style to help my patients. And in Colorado, that really was great. When I moved to Chicago 6 years ago, I found that even though I was in a suburban area instead of a small town in a rural area, I could have the same impact. People were even more interested in having a healthy lifestyle and losing weight and being fit because, you know, unlike Colorado, the leanest state in the country, Illinois is not even close to that. And so this is a huge problem every day. And so I really felt like I could use my cooking skills, transition to more healthy cooking, and really get out in the community to have more impact that way. And that's what I've been doing for the last 6 years, cooking at farmers markets and Whole Foods markets and adapting recipes for people when they come in, their favorite family recipes, to try to make them healthier, to try and get them eating better.
I wish I had a doctor like you. So what are you doing here in Italy? I know there's some research involved, not just – it's a bit of a vacation and a chance to eat and learn. But what are you here to do?
Well, I'm in between jobs, this is the rare occasion in my career where I have a couple weeks off, and I chose to spend it going to medical conferences, improving my skills.
Oh, yeah, and tell us about your medical conference you went to as well in a minute.
Right. So in Napa, the first conference I went to, which was one of my favorites, it's the second time I've attended, it's called Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives, and it's a joint conference between the Harvard School of Public Health and the Culinary Institute of America's Greystone campus in the Napa Valley in St. Helena. And that is a combination of chefs and public health physicians. And the conference is designed to teach doctors and healthcare professionals and nutritionists and chefs how to prepare healthier food and to understand the state of the science for nutrition. So
it seems like a no-brainer, but it...
Yeah. What most people don't understand is that doctors receive, even to this day, very little or no training in nutrition when they're in medical school. And so 19 years ago when I, you know, finished medical school, I probably had an hour or two of lecture total on nutrition. And I've had...
Really?
Yeah, total.
So this does go back to your whole thing of prevention as well. So if you're only being taught this as a doctor, then how are you able to teach this to your patients as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think the truth is that most doctors don't really do a whole lot of nutrition. They certainly don't do a lot of good advising of patients on healthy eating and even fitness. Most patients report that even when they go into a doctor's office overweight, probably two-thirds of them report that the doctor didn't even bring it up. So we're as physicians, we're doing a really bad job at talking to people about their weight and obtaining lean body weight or a healthy weight, and we're doing a really bad job talking about people's diets. And the reason is, there's a reason, and the reason is we're just so busy. we don't have a ton of time. We might have 10 minutes to see you and talk about multiple medical problems that are really serious. I think it warrants the time and that we need to start spending more time on this. And it's happening, but it's a slow process. Most the doctors have to go seek education to learn how to better advise their patients. That's why this conference in Napa was such a great one. It's helping 500 doctors every year.
That's great. I was going to ask how many are there.
Yeah, 500. And I attended one a couple of years ago from University of Arizona. Andrew Weil has a conference every year. This one was in San Francisco a few years ago. Same thing, just to get a little bit better knowledge of nutrition and how to advise my patients. And that one was packed, you know, probably 500 or 600 doctors at that conference as well. So doctors are seeking the information, but it's going to be a slow transition.
Mm-hmm. And okay, so now back to what you're doing here. Okay. You besides cooking and whatnot, you've been asking a lot of Italians some very specific questions. Yeah. What are they? Let's talk about that.
All right. Well, one of the reasons that I really like this region
I love this part.
Yeah, is that so a lot of people know about what blue zones are. Blue zones are areas that have been identified in the world. There's probably about a dozen of them where people live a really long time. I mean, people live to be 90, 100 consistently. And, you know, people have gone to these areas to study what are the commonalities, what are the common things that are happening in these regions so to understand why people live longer in some areas than others. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, Italy happens to be in the top 10 countries where people live the longest. They have the longest in the top 10 for life expectancy. So that was one of the reasons I wanted to come to Italy and study the Mediterranean diet. It's really hot. It's in the news. But Le Marche region in general is number one in Italy for longevity. And so the fact
hold
that
the presses.
You're here,
hold the presses. Can you repeat that one more time?
Yeah. Yeah, that where we sit right now is the largest, the longest lived region in Italy. People have the longest life expectancy of any region in Italy in this area.
It's incredible. Jason and I will joke that we think, and joke but serious, that we feel like when we moved here that we added years to our life from the kind of activity that we do, the not being so sedentary at a desk, to the way we eat, to the air we breathe, and to our stress levels. So it's something we kind of play around with already. But in this recipe for longevity, what is that recipe?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head there. I think the first and foremost, when they look at blue zones, and especially in this area, what they're most famous for is their laid-back lifestyle. One of the things that you hear constantly about this area is, we don't worry about much. We don't watch the clocks. You'll read that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And that
you
kind
feel
of,
it.
Yeah, that kind of lifestyle. And it doesn't mean that the people here are lazy. The people here are constantly mm-hmm. moving, and they're very busy. Mm-hmm. But they're not worried. They're mm-hmm. not stressed. And one of the reasons is the sense of community and family here is so strong. There's not so much to worry about. No matter what happens to these people, they will take care of each other.
Exactly.
And there's not a lot of places in the world where that's true, and it's certainly not true in the United States. There's a lot of stress and fear in people all the time. Where's my food coming from? Where's my paycheck coming from?
What happens if I lose my – all those things, if I lose my job or if my car battery's dead or, you know, my car doesn't start in the morning, what do I do?
Yeah, and we're living at in Italy, they're living at a time of severe, extreme turbulence. There is no government right now, correct?
Exactly. I mean,
the government's in turmoil here.
Financial crisis.
And you walk the streets here, and people are smiling every day and laughing, and life goes on, and you would have no idea mm-hmm. walking through any part that I've been to in the last 5 days of this region. You would have no idea that any of this was going on. People seem extremely happy. They're extremely relaxed. They're busy doing their thing. It's just incredible to see. And that the intense sense of community is something that I wish we had back home and that you see in certain areas a little bit here and a little bit there. But I think the American culture is definitely missing that sense of community. And that sense of family, I think, has long ago faded in our culture.
It's so true. I mean, it's kind of a trite way to say it. In 8 years in New York, we didn't know our neighbors' names, but in 8 months, we knew everyone in town here. You know, we didn't know the people in our building in New York before. That it's just this kind of feeling that, like you said, no matter what the kind of state of the government is here, or the financial crisis, or any of it, there's this very calm feeling that's going to be okay. I don't stress about those things because I know we're in it.
Yeah.
It's kind of a ridiculous thing in one aspect, especially coming from New York or this kind of the sky is falling mentality, that you just go, it's going to be fine. Okay, even if the shit hits the fan, we've taught ourselves now how to garden, or we have neighbors with, you know, animals, with livestock and these things. And
well, like, and if you got
a comfort level,
yeah, if you got snowed in and you had no way to get food, you probably wouldn't have to worry for more than a few hours and somebody would show up if you lost mm-hmm. your electricity and couldn't have food here, couldn't stay warm. I mean,
when we had the snowstorm last year of 10 feet of snow, people were calling us from town and texting us saying, do you come to our house, spend the night at our house? And we couldn't believe it. I mean, it was so touching because they knew we were down this long road out here isolated and that these people in town had their own worries and making sure they were doing okay in the weather and all of this, but that they were thinking about us down here. I don't know. There really is such a strong feeling that I just had no idea that that would be such a high level on a life expectancy. Because we were talking about depression and suicide and things, that how communities, when people feel needed.
Yeah, people need a sense of purpose. It's absolutely critical. And when they lose that sense of purpose, which often happens when they retire or when a loved one dies, in the United States, when somebody is older and they lose a spouse that they've had for decades, they mm-hmm. typically don't often live that long if they're older. And that's not uncommon. But here, you know, the other thing I love about here is so we've got the sense of community, mm-hmm. the laid back attitude, and then you've got the food of the region. And I think that's the other, you know, the other really key factor is that the diet eaten here, you've got the sea is very close by, so you've got an abundance of fresh fish and seafood, which is great. And then you also have all this farmland where you can grow, you know, the whole grains grow here, citrus grows here, you know, so fruits and vegetables everywhere, olives, olive oil. All of the things that you hear about in the Mediterranean diet in the news these days that are supposed to be so good for you and help increase your quality of life, these people have been eating this way for hundreds and hundreds of years. So there's no question that in addition to those lifestyle and cultural issues that happen here, that the food is a huge factor. And so one of the great things about staying at this Agriturismo is...
Yes, tell me.
Yeah, is that I can learn how to cook this food really well. I've been cooking this style of food, you know, for years and years and years, but I've never gone out and foraged for radicchio, you know, and wild radicchio and brought it home and cooked it down and stuffed ravioli with it. Or
that was fun. We did that yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, that's just not something that you can do at home and mm-hmm. walk out the door and pick your herbs mm-hmm. that are growing, you know, next to a tree in your yard. And go to the farmers markets in town are unbelievable with, you know, fish and vegetables, and everybody's so nice. But to learn how to cook this food, and we've cooked a lot of vegetables. I really wanted to pick up as many techniques as I can. And I mean, everything. I mean, you know, we cooked fresh spinach the first night that I was here. Roasted cauliflower. We had grilled pork chops, extremely lean, but great, fresh from the area. And even the dessert, which was, you know, was a walnut apple torta, was extremely light, small portion, mm-hmm. but it really finished off the meal nicely with a digestivo that I think you made. Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, that was delicious. And that really, like, again, that's another one of those things that very common in Israel, not necessarily in Israel, but in Italy, digestivos are extremely common. And I think they, you know, people say here and the doctors say here, you know, really help with digestion. And
absolutely.
It's very common. We don't do that at home.
The hard part is it's absolutely delicious and a bit of a nice little boozy kick at your end of the meal. But a lot of times I have to tell people, don't shoot it. Right. Sip it, enjoy it. It's meant to be an aid to digestion, not to inebriation.
We're Americans. We have to shoot everything like that. I mean, and have another one.
I know. Yeah. I'm like, don't I know? This is supposed to help you go to bed. It's digestivi are kind of something funny, the after dinner drinks to help you digest, because a lot of women in Italy, I don't know if it's for being prim and proper or if it's the way they're raised or just a general taste bud thing, but a lot of women aren't big drinkers who are out here. It could also be we surround ourselves with a lot of women over 60, but they won't drink a lot of wine or anything during their meal and maybe rarely put a little Sambuca in their cafe. But almost regularly will they accept and say, yes, I'll take a Sambuca or a Grappa after dinner to help me digest, which I just find that kind of interesting that it really is a digestion aid. It's not just...
Yeah, it's
something sweet.
And again, you know, speaking with local healthcare professionals in this area, they really feel like it's a really good thing for you. And so the second, that was the first night. I mean, I arrived in the late afternoon. We had that, and then the second day that I was here, my first really half day of cooking, we cooked all anapasti, almost all vegetables, and. You know, but I think the highlight for me really was getting to sit down and have dinner with Dr. Gaji, who I've been hearing about on your, you know, podcast for a long time, and to have him come, you know, a cardiologist from this region taking care of these people, and you know, to sit down and be able to spend a couple hours with him, that was really fun.
I know,
a great guy. That was really a highlight.
I'm glad, and I know that it was really fun for him because it's. Also, if you think about that, here we are, way out here down some dirt country road, yet there is a prestigious doctor from Chicago here staying at our house. And so for Gaji, that's something really incredible too. Like, that's a chance in a lifetime to hear your point of view of what the healthcare is like in the States or to ask some questions. And so it is just as fulfilling for him as I'm sure it is for you. And so let's talk about some of the questions you asked him too.
Well, I asked him, I know from what I've read about the area for what they publish and what people say about why people live so long, but I've been really interested in asking the people who live here why they think that people live so long here. And it was great to be able to ask a cardiologist those same questions. And what was really interesting was he gave all the same answers that everybody else did. But, you know, he knows that their laid back lifestyle is absolutely critical and that they don't worry and that they don't watch clocks. He even said it. All of it's really true. I mean, those things really, they're factors in Crete, they're factors in Okinawa, you know, all of these places where people live a really long time. And they absolutely are true here. And all of the people that I've asked, even the people on the street that I've asked, they've all given the same answers. And I have to say to everybody out there, I really speak almost no Italian. I can order a coffee. I can order some food in a restaurant. But to have the translators that I've had with me everywhere, and Ashley and Jason have been fantastic, and so that I could have a 2 or 3 hour meal with Dr. Gaji. And there was just, we didn't miss a beat. I mean, they were translating like crazy, you know, speaking in Italian and English for me. And it really felt like we were talking to each other. That was really cool.
Good.
Yeah. I don't feel like if you don't speak Italian, you can't come to this region. People are extremely nice and everybody's worked with me. And again, I have almost very little
skills
in Italian.
We should preface that Mike doesn't walk into a normal cafe or grocery store, butcher shop like a normal person. With a video camera strapped to his forehead, like a lantern.
Yeah, I've got an HD Hero, you know, GoPro camera on me at all times usually, and I like wearing it around, you know, with like a helmet cam, and you know, it looks very strange. But I got to say about this area, what I really like is when the Italians see you filming them. They smile and they get excited and they really enjoy it. And I think they think it's really cool.
I think so too.
Other places that I've been, not so much. Yeah. People are really not into it, but I haven't had any hostile reactions, even from, you know, people at the stalls at the farmer's markets. Everybody's been super great and willing to talk and smiling and
kind of fumble through it.
Really fun. And I'm recording all this because, you know, I don't want to miss a thing. I want to learn how to pick the freshest vegetables at the markets. And since I've been here, you know, not only have I learned, I think, the classic things that people like to do, like, you know, I feel very confident that I can make pasta and that I can make pizza and that I'll find a way to make it as healthy as I can for me and my patients. But in general, I think it's really healthy the way those things are made here. But just the vegetable cookery here in general, the Mediterranean cooking, you know, I can take a whole fish now. I can pick it out at the market. I can take it home and clean it properly and scale it and roast it. And that's something that, you know, I don't do a lot at home. I see whole fish in the markets. They're a lot cheaper. Usually the freshest fish that we have at home are whole fish that haven't been butchered yet, haven't been cleaned. And now I'm really excited that I can go select a great fish and prepare it at home. And I have the skills to do that. I've been here 4 days. You know, I can make pasta. I can make pizza. I mean, this, you know, from that standpoint, the skills that I've gained, it's absolutely incredible. And I think it's gonna really help me, you know, translate that into giving my patients even more as far as healthy cooking and delicious cooking.
You know, well, food. And you do something really cool. Thank you, by the way. Not that I taught you anything, but that – I think it's really cool that you do cooking classes for the community in different libraries or things like that. And I think that is such a great way to reach out to not only your patients, but then beyond the whole community and say, there's ways. I'm a doctor and I get it. And I'm here to help you and help prevent these things. And because it seems like there's a lot of myths around things like confusion or I'm not sure, especially in my mind, listening to cooking classes with the guests. Olive oil and salt in particular.
Right. I mean, so, you know, olive oil, that's one of those things, you know, in America, you know, fat has been evil for decades. And most people don't realize that several years ago, according to some of the largest studies ever done anywhere, you know, low fat diets don't work. They really don't work. They don't help you lose weight. And not all fat is bad for you. So fats like olive oil are extremely good for you, not in huge quantities, but in small quantities, they help, you know, lower your bad cholesterol and raise your good cholesterol. And, you know, cultures that eat olive oil regularly, daily, seem to do better in general and live longer in general than people that use more saturated fats like cream and butter. So olive oil is really, really good for you, and it's really good to eat a little bit every day. Same thing with nuts. A handful of nuts every day is fantastic for you. People that eat a handful of nuts in general live longer than people who don't. I mean, that's one of those little things that you can do that really helps. The salt myth really is, you know, everybody knows that salt isn't great for you and you shouldn't have too much. But in the United States, in your diet, 70% of salt in most people's diet in the United States comes from commercially produced and processed foods. And so, the average, salt consumption of the Americans, 70% of sodium content, salt content coming into their diet is coming from processed food. And so it's not the salt that you cook with at home typically that's a problem. And it's not the salt that you sprinkle a little bit on your food when you're in a restaurant or cooking at home. It's the frozen meals. It's the canned goods. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's all of the commercially processed. So I think in Italy, it's not as big a problem. And again, in this region in particular, there is no commercially produced food that I've seen since I've been here. Mm-hmm. Everything we've eaten since we've been here has been homemade. And I get the sense that that's the same in every house in this region. Correct?
I would agree. In most houses...
It's not 100%. It never can be, but I would say it's a drastically reduced amount of processed food compared to the aisles. And we talked about this.
Yeah.
You walk through the grocery store here, the vegetable section is huge. The fresh dairy, the fresh cheese section is huge. The meat section is big, and the inner aisles with the processed food, the cookies and the crackers, it's much smaller in comparison.
Yeah, and I have to say, all the shopping we've done, we've been in shops where they either exclusively sold vegetables with a few little things, or maybe you'll hit a farmer's market where again there's really no processed food at the farmer's market, and we'll get into that season at home soon, and I encourage everybody to shop as much as you can and you can afford to at a farmer's market because there's usually nothing processed there. But I do think the fact that people cook more,
mm-hmm.
This is another key part of people that live in blue zones and people that eat healthy that we're getting away from in the United States is eating at home, having a family meal, preparing your food. One of the reasons, one of the theories behind the obesity epidemic that's happening in the United States is that, half of all food dollars are spent outside the home now. And that was never the case. If you go back 20 or 30 years, people were cooking at home.
Remember when you were, Godge was here, remember his reaction when you mentioned how many people eat in their car?
Yeah.
What was that statistic you said?
Some estimates are up to 20% of the food eaten outside the home are eaten in automobiles.
Godge freaked out and said he's never seen anyone eat in their car before.
Yeah, because I haven't seen a drive-through since I've been here. And at home, if you go back 10 or 20 years, maybe you had, places like McDonald's where you would drive through for lunch and dinner, mostly dinner. Then lunch became extremely popular. And now with Starbucks having drive-throughs everywhere and Dunkin' Donuts having drive-throughs everywhere, it's breakfast, lunch, and dinner and snacks in between.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unbelievable when I look at a diet log, when I have people write down everything they've eaten for the last couple of weeks, which I do with my patients who want to get healthier, they come in and they are hitting these drive-thrus for coffees several times a day, and they're not getting black coffee. They're getting, you know, a frappuccino. They're getting a large latte with you know, whole milk sometimes. Some, you know, some of these drinks are between 500 and 800 calories. Or they're getting a low-calorie drink with a muffin, but they don't understand that the muffin has 500 calories. So they get their workout in at the gym. They burn about 200 calories, and on the way home, they grab, you know, a coffee and a muffin, and they undo every bit of good that they did towards, you know, maintaining their weight.
Mm-hmm.
With a little snack on the way home before they, you know,
well, and part of it dinner. Is, like you said, it's in our culture. It's just everywhere. We're inundated with the fast food or the processed food that it's so easy. It seems so convenient. And talking about the preparation of food, something we were discussing earlier today with a woman from Piobico who was here, is the lack of microwaves even in Italian homes. And just as we were discussing, like, the activity it takes to create your meal and the importance of that.
Yeah, there's no question. I mean, the more active you are physically, exercise is really important, but physical activity is extremely important too. One of the best lectures I attended at this Healthy Kitchens, Healthy Lives conference, you know, from the Harvard School of Public Health, was a lecture from a man who he's a physiatrist, a physical medicine doctor, and his you know, the most important message that he gave that day, that was given that day of the whole conference, was the more sedentary you are, the more likely you are to die, and that's a fact. So if you sit around on the couch and you sit around at a desk all day and, you know, you come home and you watch TV, mm-hmm. You know, you're in big trouble.
That was my previous life. Yeah, I mean, you'd wake up, take the train, sit on the train, sit at your desk. Yeah. I'd worked out, but an hour workout when you're doing that and eating so much shit. I mean, what does that really even do?
Yeah. And so, you know,
you feel bloated and
yeah. So because of our society and the way we live, and we don't walk to work, and we, mm-hmm. you know, very little walking to get to public transportation, we need to structure, either exercise into our lives, which is what we recommend all the time. But people are so overwhelmed with raising their children and working so hard and working 6 days a week. A lot of people don't have time to exercise, but 30 minutes a day of brisk walking counts. And if you get it in 10-minute blocks, it counts. So if you get a break during the day, you know, 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there, 10 minutes on the way home, you're done. You can get 30 minutes in and it counts.
And you're telling me that even cooking dinner and just taking a little more time in cooking dinner counts?
Absolutely. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, you pop a frozen dinner in a microwave or a frozen dinner in an oven and you go back to watching TV, and 40 minutes later, you eat the food that you made, which is full of preservatives and salt, you know, compared to, you know, preparing a meal, which might take you 30 to 60 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But that's physically, you know, physical activity. I mean, that's good for you. And not to mention, when you're cooking your own food, you know exactly what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you're going to have less salt because you're preparing it yourself and it's not processed. And you have the choice to throw in some healthy things. So even if you like to cook, you know, a steak or hamburgers or macaroni and cheese, I mean, if you can throw in some roasted cauliflower like we made on the first night, if you can, you know, throw in some salads and some greens. I mean, the greens here, you know, are amazing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, spinach, you know, any leafy green is going to be great. But carrots, you know, broccoli, asparagus, there are so many different things. You know, the roasted peppers that we made the other night, the pepperonata, you know, just very simple, doesn't take a lot of effort. Great for you. You know, fennel salad with blood oranges that we made. You know,
mm-hmm.
again, things that take almost no time to prepare. And are delicious, and people just don't think. You know, there's fennel in pretty much every grocery store now in the United States, but I rarely see people cook with it. But
on a side note, as weird as this is, when you search like your Google Analytics or your blog analytics and stuff, how to use fennel is like one of our number one searches of how people find us. Because I did some post on it, and I think it must be a thing that people are curious about it, or they know it's supposed to be good for you, but have no idea how to use it or cut it. But it's a funny one. Fennel's great.
No, fennels, I mean,
those
again,
root vegetables.
Well, and the citrus, you know, with the blood oranges that you have here are so beautiful. And I mean, the meal we're about to have, we're going to sit down and we're going to have, you know, I mean, how great was it? We were sitting around talking, shelling fava beans for,
mm-hmm.
I mean, really 15, 20 minutes, but that's really fun. Having a glass of wine, shelling fava beans, talking about, you know, what's been going on. That's a social thing. It's
mm-hmm.
really good. It takes energy to do. And I mean, the fava bean crostini that's sitting in front of me right now, we're about to eat dinner. You know, we spent a couple hours, you know, we've got fava crostini. We've got, you know, these garden vegetable, it's like a layered, ramekin almost in the oven of fresh vegetables that are going to be delicious, you know, seasoned with fresh herbs and lemon and
plenty of olive oil.
Yeah, olive oil. I mean, I think, you know, it's going to be amazing. We've got a fish in the oven right now, you know, the fish stuffed with herbs and lemon roasting in rock salt. And again, that's the kind of thing where you think, oh, that's got to be really bad for you. But, you know, the salt stays on the outside. It's used to cook the fish. It's mm-hmm. not inside the fish.
And there's nothing and processed going on with the fish.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. And then, you know, and then we made a homemade, you know, a light dessert that's homemade. It's mostly, you know, apples and fresh walnuts and pine nuts and raisins, you know, a little tiny splash of Sambuca for flavor. And there's a little bit of a light crust on the outside. But, you know, that is, I mean, I'm really excited for dinner tonight. That
I know. Really, yeah. We should wrap this up so we can have dinner as well. Jason delivered the fava crostini and it looks absolutely delicious. But to sum it up, for a long life and a great Mediterranean kind of diet or lifestyle would be community.
Be as relaxed as you can, as much
stress
as you can.
Stress-free.
Right.
Part of your community.
Reduce your stress. Mm-hmm. And, you know, try to get involved with your community or your family even. I mean, try starting family meals again, even if it's just
it's
one
so
a day.
It's so
right?
true.
Sit down and have dinner and find out what your kids are doing in their
I know.
Lives. And, I mean, so that connection. And, if you don't have kids at home and, plugging back into the community, you know, crucial.
Mm-hmm.
Those things are critical. Then eating as many vegetables as you can. Fish, olive oil, getting fiber into your diet, eating a handful of nuts a day, not smoking, drinking alcohol in moderation, a glass of wine a day or a drink a day. Those things are all extremely good for you.
And that
will optimize your health and help you live as long as you can.
Right. Oh.
But it's nothing that people don't know. It's common sense, really, right? It's.
I think that people have lost sight of common sense, at least where we live. There's no question that, you know, so I have a large practice of people who come in and they say, I want to lose weight. And every time I start talking, they say, oh, I know that, I know that, I know that, I know that. And I look at them and I say, well, if you know everything, why are you here? And they need somebody to hold them accountable because they know it all, but they can't do it. They have no willpower, and they're so busy stressing and worrying about all the other things that they're doing that they don't take care of themselves. And they might take care of their kids or their you know their spouse, but they don't take care of themselves. And so it's like this race that's going on full speed all the time. People are neglecting their health, and so I think that if physicians were better trained to help people that they're helping to take care of. And could hold the people that they take care of accountable for their health a little bit more. And instead of everybody just coming to a doctor to get fixed, they come to a doctor and have a relationship with the doctor so they can try to help them be healthier. I mean, that's what I want to do. I want to help my patients be healthier people, mm-hmm. not healthier patients, healthier people, and live their lives and have a better quality of life so they don't have to come in so much. You know, with chronic disease management, you know, I don't want them to get the diseases. And if they have them, let's try to do as much as we can to get them out of that situation so they can rely less on medicine and more on lifestyle. And that's, I think, really important.
Are there any resources or websites that you can throw off the top of your head where people can go to?
Nutrition is a big one. And I think that there's so much misinformation out there about all of the supplements and things you need to do to be healthy. Harvard has a website. It's the Harvard's Nutrition Source. It's through the Harvard School of Public Health. I think the Nutrition Source from Harvard, if you Google it, probably the single best evidence-based information on nutrition that you can find. And I think that is really helpful. Also, there's the Institute of Lifestyle Medicine. Lifestyle medicine is the kind of medicine I'm talking about. The Institute of Lifestyle Medicine has a registry of physicians like myself who are part of the College of Lifestyle Medicine. Who practice this way, and there's usually a few in every city. There's not a ton, but those are some good places to start. But you know, the nutrition probably the most important. Harvard Nutrition Source.
Thank you so much,
all
Mike.
Right, thanks, guys.
It was a pleasure sharing the kitchen with you this week, and good luck in your new job. And I really appreciate it. It was great.
Yeah, and thanks. I really look forward to coming back, and I'm going to try and bring a whole bunch of my friends next time.
Sounds good.
Well, I think that was interesting. I hope some people out there thought so too.
Yes, absolutely. I think he does. You can tell how much passion he has, and he really does a great job of breaking it down and explaining
mm-hmm.
really kind of some complex things in a really layman's terms. I liked it.
I felt fat
and really unhealthy.
He never once was like made you feel fat, but he just told you all these ways of
and
being
you're like,
unhealthy.
You're right. You're right. Yeah. Soda's terrible.
I'm going to go eat a shame cookie.
I'm gonna go eat a shame cookie. I like it.
Or two.
Or two. Well, coming up this week, coming up the first Get Back get on back into the swing of things real. Like, so this is New Year's. The season has started.
Yes, it is.
Coming up this week, ooh, I get to do something fun. Every year, once a year, and only once a year, I get to dig a big hole in front of the kitchen and clean out the grease trap.
You lay on your belly, yep, stick your arm so deep into the hole that your face is almost into
my face is pushed against the, against the dirt. And with a big, giant ladle.
Yeah.
I ladle out all the disgustingness.
Calcified fat.
Out of the grease trap.
Nice. It's a classy job.
See? Running an agriturismo is all it's cracked up to be.
It is.
So that's what I will be doing.
And it reeks.
It stinks. It's gross.
It stinks so bad. He's always trying to get, like, someone from my family to do it when they come out or something like that. It just is. At least you know where the hole is.
Yeah, so it goes a lot quicker this now that I've figured out. Because all they give when I asked about this, because the kitchen sink was making this gurgling sound. And I asked, what's going on here? And no one knew. And I went to Fushiani and I said, where is the map of the septic system? So I found this, after much hole digging about my fifth hole, I found the right one I was supposed to do.
Oh my God, it was hysterical, but tragic and sad at the same time because it was like, son of a bitch, where's this goddamn thing?
Well, there's lots of buried tanks out in our yard for septic system and the grease and the, brown water system.
And almost like it's a riddle, just an equation. Yeah. Like on a piece of paper.
So it's not like there's something up on the ground level. No, all these things are buried anywhere from 60 centimeters to 1 meter underneath the ground. And what you do is you take a tape measure and you measure from one corner of the house and the other corner of the house and certain measurements and where those two intersect each other. If you make like an X, where those two measurements intersect is where you're supposed to dig down.
Needless to say, there was some trial and error. Needless to say, that's why there were six holes.
Not so precise. Not so precise. That which is shocking. Shocking to me. So that's what I'll be doing today. Ashley, what do you got on the agenda?
Oh, my gosh. We need to stop by and see Carolyn. We'll check on the tomato seedlings and see how they're popping up. Working on the book, of course, and I took some awesome pictures of La Rocciata, which is a gorgeous apple and pine nut, walnut, rustic roll. And
From Umbria.
And the dough is really cool because it's made with olive oil and white wine, and it's really delicious. And it came out awesome when you were doing it in your last cooking class. So I took some great pictures, and I want to post that recipe.
Yep. Coming up here soon, there'll start to be the festivals and all the stuff going on in the Marque. So.
Oh, this weekend is supposed to be the Festival of the Frogs in Fermignano.
Oh, yeah, we've been to that one. Do you want to tell them about this one?
Well, we've talked about it before, real quick, so in Fermignano, they have the Festa di Rana, and it's...
Rania.
Rania is spider.
Rana. Oh, you're right. Sorry, I'm a jerk.
And they put these frogs on wheelbarrows, these like flat medieval wheelbarrow things, and in costume, like, what would you say their costumes are?
Like,
surf? Renaissance kind of costumes. They would run through the village, and if the frog jumps off, they have to put the frog back on and keep going, and... It's this hysterical festival.
And then you eat fried frog's legs?
Yeah, but for some reason, it's to celebrate like their liberation from the Duke or something. And I don't know what exactly the frogs have to do with it, but there's tons of frogs. When it gets really wet and rainy out here, frogs cover our street. And it is so weird because you think, where the hell did all of these frogs come from? And where do they go the next morning? Isn't it totally bizarre?
There are a lot, when it gets wet, there are a lot of
huge,
frogs
like,
that come out.
Frogs and toads and... It's kind of
You forgot the best part of the whole...
Making fun of you?
No.
Oh, what?
You forgot the best part of the whole race.
Oh, you're right. So it's the neighborhoods compete against each other. And the dinner or the food served at the festival is fried frog's legs or frogs in porchetta. And it goes full circle, that's for sure.
That's not what I was talking about.
Oh, so like,
there is a vet that checks all the frogs right before the race to make sure no one has drugged the frogs. Because if your frog jumps off your cart, you have to stop and put him back on. So if the frog is all doped up and loopy, he won't go anywhere. He'll just sit right on there. So
oh, it's serious business.
It is serious business.
Oh, my God.
All right, very good. Bring it home for this week.
All right. Thanks for listening again, everyone. And next week's podcast is going to be a dedicated Pizza 101, thanks to an email listener, long-time listener, first-time caller.
I love it when you say long-time, first-time.
Long-time, first-time. That was awesome. And so we're going to go over a bunch of pizza questions and technique and recipe, the whole thing. So
I know I'm going to start firing up the pizza oven here.
I know.
Soon.
We're going to talk about temperature and how to get your heat right in a wood-fired oven. It'll be pretty cool. And so if you guys have any other questions regarding pizza, definitely shoot them in this week or Facebook us with them. Facebook. So you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, blog, YouTube, Vimeo, all those places, LinkedIn at La Tavola Marche, LATAVOLMARC. C-H-E. And that's latavolamarque.com, or you can shoot us an email at info@latavolamarque.com.
All right. Very good. Well, from cloudy,
overcast,
kind of chilly.
I know, but I'm looking at the flower buds, so it's making me really happy.
Yeah, starting to flower, so it's coming. It's coming.
It's coming.
Very good. Have a wonderful week, and thank you so much for listening.
Ciao.